The reading this morning is from Isaiah 6, chapters, verses 6 to 8. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting down upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim, each had six wings. With two he covered his face, with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one called to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts, and the whole world is full of his glory." And the foundations of the thresholds shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was full of smoke. And I said, "Woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." Then flew one of the seraphim to me, having in his hand a burning coal, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth and said, "Behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin forgiven." And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?" Then I said, "Here I am, send me."
Thank you, Marilyn. It's not often that the reading preceding my sermon is from the Hebrew Scriptures. But that passage, that image, is just too good to pass up. It's the distilled image of an Old Testament prophet called by an awesome God to bring a message to the people. And as was often the case, typically the case, the person about to become a prophet feels unworthy. In Isaiah's case, he's a person of unclean lips, living amidst people of unclean lips. The image of the angel touching the prophet's lips with a burning coal from the altar to take away guilt and forgive sin is powerful. Prophets are not chosen based on an exemplary life, nor did they necessarily lead exemplary lives after their call. They were humans, compelled by a force they couldn't resist, to risk their own popularity and safety, to let the people know the consequences of their present acts. Prophets were a fixture in the ancient Middle Eastern society. They weren't unique to the Jewish experience. But I speak here primarily about prophets and prophecy in the context of the Hebrew Bible. At the height of the Jewish monarchies, prophets were professionals working in the royal courts. Prophets were employed by the courts to give advice to the king. Although we may think of the great individual prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Amos, and so on, there were many more, now nameless, who worked in groups and in guilds of prophets, advising the king. The boundary between prophet and priest was often non-existent. Many of the prophets were also priests. The role of a prophet in the biblical sense is trivialized if we think only of the prophet as one who predicts future events. Prophets lived in turbulent times. The events they foresaw were only a few years into the future. They were events that anyone observing the times could have predicted. Based on the massing of foreign enemies or the failure or success of alliances between nations. It's a total misread of these texts to interpret the writing of a Hebrew prophet 3,000 years ago as something that was intended to warn us in this time of some impending historical event. These texts, over 3,000 years old, contain the roots of our present-day understanding of what it means to speak prophetically. The prophet is not concerned on the future. They're concerned with the present. They see the error of the way people are living in the time and the need to change. Sure, they also predict dire consequences if the people do not turn from their evil ways, but the message is always rooted in the way we are living now. As minister of this congregation, I attempt to fulfill several different roles. Pastor and counselor and administrator and prophet. It's that role of prophet, that idea of a prophetic voice, that I struggle with as I prepare this sermon. I come from a very fortunate background. I have been given many of the blessings that can be received in this country, and sometimes it's difficult for me to really identify with the sins, if I can use that word, that are going on around us. The prophet stood or stands as a boundary figure. He stands between the world, he or she, or female prophets as well. He stands as a boundary figure between the world of the sacred and the world of the secular. The prophet served the king, the secular head of the state, but his or her ultimate loyalty was always to the sacred will of God as he or she was given the gift to understand it. Is this not the uncomfortable ground that we all, as religious people, as Unitarian Universalists, occupy? We define it in different ways, but we all have a sense of the sacred, and we stand with one foot in the sacred and one foot in the secular. In the end, this may account for the difficulty we have in attracting new people to the church. Living into that tension between secular and sacred requires hard work. Why bother? And as your minister, I know I'll turn people away if my message is always about what we're doing wrong in society and the effort that we need to make in order to change. Returning to the sacred side for the moment. The single most important principle of prophetic speech is that it is grounded in the mystical. Prophetic speech and action is grounded in some transcendent sense of moral value that comes from somewhere beyond us, some higher power. Whether that higher power is given a name or formally acknowledged or not. There is a clear sense of right and wrong that is somehow grounded in a moral code or fundamental understanding of what is right and wrong. The Hebrew prophets often railed against those who would exploit the marginalized of society, the orphans and the widows, for example. That is something that is obvious. We take it as obvious. It comes from somewhere, I'm not sure where. The American mystic and the religious leader Howard Thurman wrote, "Therefore, the mystic's concern with the imperative of social action is not merely to improve the condition of society. It's not merely to feed the hungry. It's not merely to relieve human suffering and human misery. If this were all in and of itself, that would be important, surely. But this is not all. The basic consideration has to do with the removal of all that prevents God from coming to himself in the life of the individual. Whatever there is that blocks this calls for action." Here ends the quote. The cover of the Order of Service this morning features a painting of David Suzuki. It's an interesting painting. It was done when I found it. I Googled a little bit to find out where the painting came from. And it was painted in a competition called the Golden Brush in Vancouver by three artists working simultaneously over an hour and a half to paint that. At the time I was stumbling, I was looking for that painting. I was looking for something to illustrate the concept of a prophetic voice in our time. That painting of Dr. Suzuki with his arms outstretched was the image that I was looking for. David Suzuki is undoubtedly a modern-day prophet, one of many that I could have held up. David Suzuki describes himself as an atheist. Yet listen to this quote from David Suzuki. "The way we see the world shapes the way we treat it. If a mountain is a deity and not just a pile of ore, if a river is one of the veins of the land and not just potential irrigation water, if a forest is a sacred grove and not just timber, if other species are our biological kin, not resources, and if the planet is our mother, not an opportunity, then we will treat each one with greater respect." That's the challenge, to look at the world from a spiritual perspective. And here ends the quote. Here's another picture I considered for the cover, Cindy Blackstock. She's the Executive Director of First Nations Child and Family Care and Society of Canada. Dr. Blackstock continues to lead the fight to ensure that Aboriginal children living on reserves are receiving educational opportunities comparable to those for other children in Canada. Her passion for this work is driven by a deep conviction that we today are continuing to perpetrate a great injustice on the Aboriginal peoples of this land, continuing to treat Aboriginal children as something less than the children of European and other immigrants. There's a rock-solid, unshakable faith motivating Cindy Blackstock, a faith in the concept of justice and reconciliation. In a 2016 article in the Globe and Mail, she was described as Canada's relentless moral voice for First Nations equality. The prophet, the prophetic voice, that was a slip. the prophetic voice needs to be rooted in the unshakable faith, dare I say religious faith, in the cause being espoused. The pollution of the planet, the consequences on creatures, on the interconnected web of life, is a moral issue, a spiritual issue, a religious issue. The fact that for hundreds of years we've systematically disadvantaged the children of Indigenous peoples of this land, and that we continue to do so today, that our government, presumably reflecting the will of the people, continues today, is a moral issue, a spiritual issue, a religious issue for us. And yet somehow we must live in these two worlds. The message of history is clear. We advance through the combined efforts of the prophets and the pragmatists. We need them both. I wanted to download a video clip, and I tried for a little while last night to do it, but was unable to. In 2008, I attended the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The speaker that night at the Ware Lecture was Van Jones, and he electrified the crowd. He was amazing. He was prophetic. Talked about the coming Green Revolution. This is before Obama was re-elected, but he could see it coming, and he was talking about what could happen, what the world could be if this is done well. But then, and he praised Unitarians for all the work they had done over decades and decades of work in social justice. But then he said, "Can we govern?" And he repeated that several times. Can we govern? Are we too idealistic? Can we govern? Well, after the election of Obama, Van Jones was called to serve as special advisor to the president on green energy. I was excited. This is a dynamic man in the White House. But within a couple of months, he was let go from that position because his past statements had been too radical. His reputation was playing into an image of Obama as a dangerous socialist. the political system was working to create fear. And he was let go from that position. Can the prophet ever govern? There are rare exceptions. Anne isn't here this morning, and I didn't pass this by her ahead of time, but I want to share an example closer to home about prophetic voice. In our own church, our Truth and Reconciliation Committee is working to fulfill our UU commitment to our Indigenous peoples of Canada to find a path to reconciliation. We have a small committee working, and there are big things on the horizon you'll be hearing more about early in the year. And I want to share a story now that I haven't cleared with one of the principal parties involved, but I think I have a relationship with trust that allows me to proceed. Ann Kirsten is the prophetic voice in our midst. She came up with the idea that perhaps the people of Halifax could be persuaded to give all, if not at least a large portion, of the Shannon Park property to the Indigenous peoples of Nova Scotia. It was all their land originally. And now, we have this big piece of land that we're trying to determine what to do with. Could that be a step towards reconciliation? To be clear, Anne pursued this idea outside the work of the church committee. It was clearly beyond our scope. But she had a prophetic voice, has a prophetic voice. My reaction was that of the pragmatist. I could think of all the reasons why such a plan wasn't practical. And the prophetic voice was convinced that the cause was just, and it wasn't a matter of what was practical, it was a matter about what was right and what was wrong. Initially, I thought that plan for Shannon Park was a waste of time. But since I've realized that it made me think in new directions, it made me question what's possible and what's just. In the end, the prophet doesn't always get their way, but the prophet makes us think. We need the prophetic voice to call us back to those mystical and religious and mysterious connections that give our lives meaning. We need the pragmatist who can solve the problems, find the workarounds, and occasionally find the game-changing technologies or perspectives that make the seemingly impossible possible. We need both the secular and the spiritual in this world, and we need to find the patience and the will to stand with one foot in each camp, honoring, encouraging, and appreciating both the prophet and the pragmatist. May it be so. Amen.